This is Property Matters, a weekly catch-up on all matters property, supported by Fairview International Property Consultancy and auctionproperty.co.uk. We're live every Sunday from 10 a.m, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website, propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you're watching on our website, leave us a Google review, and if you're looking at us on social media, get involved in the conversation below. Our email address for any discussion topics is hello@propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you don't have time to watch the show live every Sunday, you can join us on the podcast. Take us on the move, if you like, from all the podcast sites that are on the other side of the screen there. We're also live every week on Dilse Radio 2. So let's take a look at a budget-related week with our property expert, Joe Joshi.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, everybody. Well, what is there to talk about in that budget-related view in terms of property? Not a great deal, but you know what? We'll make the best of it.
Reminds me of a Shakespeare play, Much Ado About Nothing, in all honesty.
Yes.
that's the thing about it, really, because there wasn't really all the things that we were hoping for. We already knew that there wasn't going to be any 99% mortgages. We did think there might be something to do with stamp duty, of course, but that didn't materialise. So I think you'd have to have been living on another planet not to know what was in there, but I'll recap very briefly. So we got a 2p cut in national insurance, which was announced in addition to a reduction that we had in the autumn statement. We had changes on non-dom tax regimes. They're going to be replaced by new regimes in 2025. And we had a new VAT threshold, which will go up from 85,000 to 90,000. And the suggestion is there, looking online, that a lot of property investors that are trying to sort of still make something out of property will find that good news, that VAT, Joe, because a lot of them are turning over sort of 80, 85,000. And they're thinking, oh, good, if I do a little bit more, I'm going to get into that VAT threshold. So they've managed to keep themselves below having to pay VAT. And this extra $5,000 gives them that little bit maybe to do a bit more.
Yes, look, I mean, VAT is always another tax that people hate having to have on there, but it is a good income for the Treasury and they're not going to budge, but they're obviously trying to motivate. It's more in line, rather than for property people, I think it's more in line for hospitality and people in the other industries where they can, you know, move the threshold to 90,000 to allow them to have a bit more VAT scope rather than at the 80,000, which was obviously, you know, so that movement is there. I mean, Europe apparently it's much, much lower and the percentage is much, much lower. So I think they're just trying to make sure that they try and give the industry, the trade industry, the shopkeepers, the restaurant people, those a little bit more scope rather than the actual property side of it, because the property transactions, they're already normally very big pools, so the chances of them actually falling within that threshold is slim, but the ones that can obviously will do.
Yeah, of course, the other big thing that he noted was the fact that the capital gains tax will be reduced from 28% to 24%, because, as he says, he thinks there's going to be more house transactions this year, so the volume increase in sales will make up for the loss in that drop of 4%. But of course, the other thing is that the actual threshold for where you start paying CGT hasn't gone up. So more people, as prices rise, will get into that trap, won't they?
Yes, look, I mean, the idea behind the 28 to 24%, really, and him saying that there's going to be more, when, of course, there's going to be more. Look, there's so many people that have borrowing on most of their properties that are now, you know, beyond recouping, so they are having to sell, and so because they have bought second properties or investment properties which they're going to now sell on, and if they sell those, then obviously they'll be liable for capital gains. So what he's really saying to them is, look, the interest rates are high, you're now going to be forced to sell, so I'm going to offer my hand of friendship by saying I'm not going to charge you 28% for the capital gains, I'll drop it by 4% because you're going to have to pay it anyway. But actually, they've already paid for it in the interest rates on the other side. And so most people will be, you know, happy to sort of move on. I mean, calls that I'm getting from across the country where people have been selling property or not shifting them, are having to shift them, they're lying empty. So, you know, they won't think about the 4% reduction. They're actually more interested in saying, well, you know, the cost of it just sitting there doing nothing is far greater than having to pay the Treasury less 4%. And the reason why the volumes will go up is primarily because most people have just got to get out. I mean, you know, so it's a buyer's market.
Some landlords will be scratching their head this weekend, won't they, Joe? Because they've scrapped the tax breaks, making it more profitable for second homeowners to let out their properties to holidaymakers rather than, of course, long-term tenants to rent, because he's taking away those tax advantages for, I think it's 210 days a year. As long as you rent your property out as a holiday furnished let, then you can get these various tax breaks that you can't get as a landlord. And we did report some, probably a year ago or thereabouts, that a lot of people were moving out of buy-to-let and moving into holiday rentals because there was a loophole.
Well, that's where the Airbnb rule was really strong. And that's why a lot of people started going down the route of Airbnb and doing short-term lets so that they had those tax breaks and it made it more viable. But, you know, that was probably not such a good news for the people on the coast or the Cornwall and Devon type of properties, where people were saying, well, look, we don't even get, you know, we haven't even got the properties to buy for our own local first time buyers, and investors are buying them up and use them as holiday lets. And so it's all in their favor rather than the people that live in that local area. So, you know, there's winners and losers, I suppose, in both aspects of it. But from an investor point of view, the win is that, yes, they now don't want to do long term lets and probably do holiday and short term lets.
When you were talking before about the fact that the politicians always understand the value of property in terms of kickstarting a market, it doesn't seem that the Chancellor's taken that advice this time, does it? Because he's really not put very much in there at all to get the property market singing on its top voice again. I mean, it really has been more about trying to put more money in people's pockets. And I guess that's the product of an electioneering budget, perhaps.
Yes, it is unfortunate, but you know, I think there's a hidden agenda in this, and the hidden agenda is very clear. And if you just, you've only got to open the newspapers or look at the, you know, the news items that are coming flashing on your smartphones all the time about where the two are now in terms of government, i.e., the reds and the blues. They're neck and neck, both as useless as each other as it goes. And I suppose what he's really doing is not giving the opportunity in the event, you know, this is just my personal view, by the way, that in the event the Blues are not successful, he doesn't want a hand on the plates to the Reds, a buoyant market and so forth. So he's actually taken that foot off the brake completely. I expected something in the autumn budget, and obviously, potentially, most people expected something in the spring budget. And so he's danced around about what he's got, 2p here and half a penny there and so forth. It's not really going to scratch the surfaces for most people. But I think that, you know, the good thing is that he's probably put a bit more money into the NHS, which is, you know, useful. But anything else was, to be honest with you, not worth the paper it's been written on. But I think it's mostly a political budget rather than a business budget. It's about, you know, who's going to come in and what legacy they want to leave and how easy they want to make it for the other side when they come in. Because obviously, whatever he sets in now is going to be set in stone for until the next budget, until the new Chancellor, if that's the case, comes in and unravels some of it and rejigs the numbers. Look, the reality is it's the same amount of money in the pot, isn't it? It's just who's going to get it and who's not going to get it. And in this case, they've not actually lit the fuel on the property market. Property market is not dire. I'm not going to say it's in a dire strait, but it's very, very challenging for first-time buyers. And without first-time buyers being in the system, we don't have a property market. That's the long and the short of it. Yes, there are international buyers, but, you know, through his non-dom sort of restrictions as well, some of those international buyers will rethink about where they're going to go and how they're going to do too.
Yeah, there's very little in there for first-time buyers. I mean, apart from the 2p cut in national insurance, which will put, depending on who you talk to, anything up to £900 a year back in their pocket, that'll go on mortgage payments, I guess. But apart from that, there was nothing for first-time buyers, really, was there?
No, nothing at all. Nothing for anybody, to be honest with you. I even thought that he might actually extend the Help to Buy scheme, and we didn't even get that. So, you know, all of that is coming to an end.
Interesting comment from one estate agent said the reduction in CGT, capital gains tax, could encourage even more buy-to-let investors who were thinking of selling up to leave the market in case a Labour government increases CGT even further in the future. This could obviously then reduce the availability of rental property and push up rents, making it more difficult for tenants and young people in particular. And there has been some discussion, hasn't there, Joe, at the after the budget about what the next budget, whoever's in power, will look like, because that's when we're going to get the bad news. After we voted for somebody, they're going to tell us, well, this is what it's really got to be like. So there is an argument that says actually by reducing CGT, they think, well, might as well get out now and quit while I'm ahead.
Well, this is the point I'm trying to make, that it's a political budget, and it's a budget made and designed for whoever ends up holding the baby next. And so, you know, that's when the reality will come out. I mean, there's been discussions going on where they say that both Labour and the Conservative are fully aware, and what they've actually presented is not the truth. It's really covering up the truth, but the reality will kick in as soon as the next long-term person comes in, whether it's Labour or the Conservatives, or it might be a hung parliament. It might even be another coalition. We have no idea what's going to happen. But watch this space. But the reality is that all he's done is just parked himself to say, I've done a few bits, but I'm not doing a great deal. I'm not fueling the housing market. I'm not offering first-time buyers anything. He's done nothing really, in all honesty. And that means he just wants to sit on his hands and wait until whatever happens in the election, because that will happen. It has to happen this year. The latest, I think, is beginning of next year. But I think it's going to be, they're all talking about May, which I think is short. Probably, you know, autumn, we'll probably get an election. We'll be able to decide from there which way it's going to go. But certainly, it's good for the people that want to sell their properties now, and from the CGT point of view, because they can take advantage of that 4% decrease, which is why he's saying that, you know, that would help the housing market, because he expects a lot of people to start to think, well, actually, you know, if I'm going to get out, I might as well get out now, and that will bring more money. So it's the Tesco and Lidl concept, stack it high and sell it cheap situation. And that's what he's doing. He's just taking a leaf out of their book and saying, well, look, you know, we're going to get out, so this is the time to get out. So, you know, you might as well cut it down to £1.99, less than £2 and a penny, and, you know, it makes it look cheaper at 4% less than what it was at the, you know, or yesterday, as so to speak. So I think, I really think this is more about just getting whatever they can money-wise in and not make any commitments going forward.
It's also a lot of devil in the detail that he didn't mention. So, for example, the missed opportunity to make the change on the stamp duty threshold for first-time buyers at 625 to make that permanent. He didn't do that. So that means it's going to go back to the original amount in March of next year. And that means 30% more first-time buyers will be paying the full stamp duty from March next year. So I guess at least we're going to have a rush of people trying to get in before the change next March.
Yes and no. Again, the same thing applies. I mean, it's the same thing about, but you know, help to buy. You know, where how many people can rush? They can't do that. Help to buy would have been a good thing to carry on. That may have helped the first time buyers. That may have helped the stamp duty income. But from where I see it, Paul, I just think they've just literally parked themselves. Like you say, devil is in the details, and most people haven't looked at the details. But the reality is, a lot of things are going to come in. You know, so yes, it's knocked 2p off and it's knocked 4% off the CGT. But in essence, there are things that are still in the system that are going to come back and bite us on the bum. And that is going to be, like you say, that, you know, the increase in stamp duty is going to happen. It's not going to stay in stone. The Help to Buy scheme is going to be gone. The interest rates, I don't know, the bank will probably consider it, but I still feel that it's, you know, if we ever got a cut, I think they're going to look for an inflation number of 2, which is 2%. And at 2%, the bank may consider doing it, dropping it down to 5%. That might motivate the market. But the first time buyers are being offered good fixed rates at the moment, anything between 4 and 4.5% in some cases, subject to status. So the reality is that, you know, it's all in that sort of pool. It's not going very further out of it. But the only good thing is that people never stop wanting to buy. In all the years that we've been doing this and all the years that I've been in property, people have never stopped wanting to buy a property. So they will find a way that they can actually get into the market, get on the market and get onto the ladder as soon as they possibly can.
I suppose the positive out of this, if you want to look at it, is with the CGT dropping to 24 from 28%, that means those landlords that were teetering on the brink of making a decision will finally go, oh, go on then, I'm going to sell now. And that'll mean a lot more sort of small properties on the market for first-time buyers. So there should be more stock available.
Yes. I mean, there is more stock available, and that 4% could tip the scale between somebody saying, well, I'll keep it or I'll get rid of it, because all of a sudden that 4%, depending on the value, could mean anything between 10,000 and 20,000, 30,000 pounds gain to that person. And they might think, well, actually, I wasn't going to get that, but if I get rid of it now, at least I've got some money back in my pocket. Let me get rid of it. So, yeah, it's going to move people over the edge. One way or another, either they're going to, you know, get on with it, or they're just going to stay and not do anything about it. But I think that the reality is that the budget was really, I mean, everybody was waiting for it, but we all got nothing out of it. And I say all of us, not one of us really got anything. No particular industry did, you know, well gain out of it. I mean, the only benefit I saw was that the NHS got some money put into it, which I think, you know, rightly they deserve because they do a grand job.
And one thing that, of course, many people have been talking about is reforming of planning. There was no suggestion at all in there, not even hints of the fact that there would be any changes to planning. I think there was some announcements, not in the budget, but mentioned in Parliament the same day about permitted development rights, further releasing of the protocols around that, I suppose, if you want to call it that. But other than that, in the budget, absolutely nothing about reform of planning.
No, it's interesting that the absence of Mr. Gove at the levelling up and the housing ministers and so forth was, you know, non-existent. I think he probably left and went to France for the day or something. You know, he wasn't even around. So, I don't think that there is anything from anyone's point of view that has actually been an advantage at all. I mean, there are small pockets of people, Paul, that will benefit from the CGT. Drop benefit from the fact that, you know, they're going to get some more income in it. But fundamentally, and of course, the buy-to-let market, you know, the benefits are the coastal ones where they might use them as holiday lets. You could use holiday lets perhaps in some towns, especially where you've got attractions like Chessington and Legoland and things like that, where people can afford to do them on short-term lets. Whereas normally most people can't afford to come out of the short-term lets and have to come in because there's not enough activity for short-term lets to happen.
I did like, I mean, we always make sure and we always say that this programme is not politically biased in any way, and indeed neither of us demonstrate any view of either side. But the truth of the matter is I did love the comment that was made, and I don't know who writes the speeches for Keir Starmer, but it was a superb speech that he gave afterwards, and he called it a give and gove budget.
Yes, that's right. I did smile on that one. You know, you give on one side then gove on the other side.
That's it.
It did resonate with me because I'm a real big fan of Mr. Gove, not. So it's interesting that's why I said it's quite interesting he was absent, because I think they would have had a great time out of that in the Parliament that day.
They did announce £242 million to invest in the support of the building of 8,000 new homes, which I suppose is a positive step in the right direction. But as you've mentioned many times before, you know, since we sold off all the council houses in the 80s, you know, there's very little stock available, and there's a lot of stuff that's sat there, you know, in disrepair that could actually be put back to use. And some kind of initiative or incentive for councils to do something about that would have been a great move, surely, especially in London.
Yeah, the problem is that most councils, if they're not bust, are about to go bust. They just haven't got the money that they're doing. And of course, Conservatives have always been flashed to say the majority. So if there's 10 of them, 8 were busted because they were run by Labour. So that was their big sort of sell. Look, we don't do that. But they went bust because they were run by Labour. The fact is that most of them are, you know, obviously at that brink. And so they, what money they do get in, they don't really want to use it to do what they think they should do. And they keep putting that onus on the private rental market, which they've actually managed to completely kibosh by all these regulations. So it's not helping, but there's a lot of homeless people now. And those homeless people are being put up in, you know, B&Bs and guest houses and hotels at that point. So we lived through the pandemic years and through these immigration points, that there's lots and lots of people that are living in hotels. And the government's paying for that. I think it's £7 or £8 million a day that they pay for people to live in those hotels, which are monies that are paid by the taxpayer. And so they, if they really thought about it, they could start to do their own stock. I've always said there's lots of properties. I drive past and I see, you know, I know that they're probably council-owned properties and they are in disrepair. They could really go and repair those and give those to people that need them, especially desperately as homeless people. But they don't. They keep saying other people aren't building enough. I'm a great believer in saying that you've got to look in the cupboard first, look at home first, see what you got in there before you could start telling the others to do what they need to do. And that's been a huge problem all the way through. And of course, yes, they want to build all these thousands of homes, but then the planning laws are so stringent, so tight, that it takes some people nearly a year, maybe 2 years sometimes, to just go through the planning application in order to maybe get some properties out there to and build. And right now, the biggest issue is probably more than any of that is build cost. Build cost has just gone straight through the roof to such a point that it's now not viable. Even those that people have got land that they want to build on, it's just not viable for them to build on it because it's gone up twice, maybe in some cases 2.5 times what it used to be. So on the average, for example, we, you know, builders, I can go back only 5 years, maybe 5-6 years ago was, you know, 120, 130, 150 pound a square foot, you know, maybe 175 will build you a luxury home. Well, all of that is now 250, 275 and £300 a square foot. It's like double the money and plus. And that's knocked everything out of the park in where the return on investment for the developer would be. So they're sitting on land that they just can't build or do anything else with.
Does that mean that, for example, if you're building an extension or making improvements to an existing home, that's no longer viable as well then?
Yes, because it's the labor cost and the building materials that has shot the building cost right up. So, you know, the builders are busy, don't get me wrong. They're busy, obviously, doing as much as they can in terms of that you can't get a hold of, you know, a decent builder. On the other hand, there's a lot of builders, developers that have now chucked in the towel because they just know that it's just not viable for them to build. In fact, they're taking on jobs to get them by doing other people's work when they really should be doing their own work, but they can't afford to do that because it's just not cost effective to do it anymore.
We mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned about downsizing, and there were some comments by some professionals in the week saying that, you know, we should be looking at the provision of age-specific housing. Now, I know that they build these little rabbit hutches for old people to retire into, and they've got a little bell in them, so in case they've got any trouble. But most people that are downsizing before they get to that stage really don't want something that restrictive. But what do you think about the idea that, you know, maybe we build areas within a town that are for first-time buyers and it's just for first-time buyers, or we have an area for older people? Because there's a social element to that as well, surely.
Yes, and I think it's not as if it's not been tried. I mean, most development blocks are always aimed at first-time buyers or investors because they're the entry point. They're the people, so your one-bedroom studios, well, two-bedroom flats or whatever, are going to go for a first-time buyer or potential investor who's then going to rent it out. So that's always been the case. It's just the taxation situation has become such and the mortgage borrowing has become such, neither the first-time buyer is in a position to buy and nor is the investor in a position to buy to rent out, because it's just now not as exciting as it was before. So, but the point about the elderly and the point about the 60 plus or the 55 plus that they tend to look at is that you know, the big houses, if someone's reached their peak of their life and achieved their ultimate goal and they've gone through the mill. So the mill is that you start as a first time buyer at a studio or a one bed or a two bed, and then up to a two bed house, then up to a three bed semi. And so that will be the normal stack. And then ultimately you've got your nice three, four, five bedroom detached house that you've, you know, been vying to have, you've got no neighbors, you've done the whole thing. And then you've become of age and you go, right, actually, you've got to go back to down. It's a bit like snakes and ladder. You've got to go back down the ladder and start again, because you're going to be stuck in some rabbit hutch, as you say, with a belt on it. And that's what you've got. They don't want to do that. Why would they want to do that? They want that country look. They want that space that they got. They've worked all their lives to achieve that. Now, it might be that some things are beyond their control, i.e., you know, disability or mental health or things that are other than, you know, normality, that then makes them having to go to such points. But most people that reach a detached house and the ultimate of their home, you know, do not wish to downsize. And if they want to downsize, they need to downsize into something or an environment that they feel is least comparable to what they've got. And hence why there's people sitting in big houses that just, you know, perhaps shouldn't be there, but can't afford to, and mentally, in their own mind, don't want to downsize.
I noted this week our industry is full of acronyms and jargon, and I noticed a new name for downsizers this week. Downsizers are now called last-time buyers, which I thought was rather nice. Last-time buyers, there you go. Oh, something new for the diary, for the dictionary even. And then the second story in the budget, the Chancellor announced plans to abolish the non-dom regime by 2025, replacing it with a residency-based system. The government is scrapping the existing outdated tax regime for non-UK domiciled individuals and replacing it with modernised resident-based regimes that it says is fairer and more competitive. This is from the 6th of April next year, 2025. There'll be a new residence-based regime where individuals will not pay UK tax on a foreign income and gains arising from their first 4 years of tax residence, provided they have been non-tax residents for the last 10 years. It's a category apparently that Hunt said was something that Nigel Lawson wanted to get rid of in 1988, but didn't. And I've always believed that we need to maintain the attractiveness of investing in the UK. So following Treasury and OBR analysis, we are concluding that we can indeed introduce a system which is fairer. Because it's a fair balance, that, because you want people to come here and invest in the UK, obviously, and this is particularly, I suspect, London-based, but if you're going to make it unattractive for them to be here, then they're not going to come, are they?
No, and London is, you know, it's a vibrant city. It's a world stage, and so they will do as much as they can, but at the same time, they won't deter. I mean, there's been so many things over the years that people have tried to do to try and sort of curb the investment and interest from international buyers. But international buyers come to London for a number of reasons. And so, you know, they can change the tax regimes. But what you have to look at is this, that most people that are at that level are in that level because they can afford to be. So if it means that they've got to change their tax regime to make sure that they stay there with the safety and the security of their family, their kids, their education, and all the other things that go along with being in London, they will go with the flow. You know, so they know that will happen. And of course, that's why he's making those changes. But, you know, I've not known of any international people. I mean, the only time we probably had a stop of international people coming in or not wanting to come in was through COVID, because they just couldn't. Other than that, I don't think there's anything that stopped anybody coming into London throughout the years. And if that was the case, London would not be as thriving a city as it is. People, you know, no matter what happened, want to move and buy in London for many things. Education, security. Security is probably quite high up there, because you get a lot of people from all over the world that feel, especially wealthy families, feel that their children are safer in London, you know, than they are in other places, perhaps in their own home countries. So there's a lot of people that tend to move to London for many other reasons other than being a non-dom.
Last part of our budget focus this week is the Chancellor's decision to abolish multiple dwellings relief for stamp duty land tax. That was one of the property tax reforms announced in the budget this week. He said that the stamp duty relief for people who purchase more than one dwelling in a single transaction was intended to support investment in the private rental sector. But an external evaluation found no strong evidence that it had been done so and that it was being regularly abused. And as a result, the Chancellor announced that he was going to abolish the relief. Basically, it's one of the ways, because a lot of people were claiming that these could be granny flats. I think you may know a lot a bit more about this kind of abuse than I do, Joe. Fill us in.
Why would you think that for a minute? So what happens is that people will buy a detached property, perhaps, and in it they will have areas that can be recognised as perhaps another dwelling within, and so therefore would look for relief on that. So the annex and the granny annex idea is a good way of demonstrating. So you might have a big detached house and then there might be an annex to the side of it, and that annex can be sort of hived off as a second dwelling, and therefore they'll get a relief from their taxation, their stamp duty against that amount. So it could amount. So if you're looking at, I don't know, let's say it's £1 million house, for argument's sake, you could look at £40,000-£50,000 less in stamp duty, because you're going to say that, you know, the annex is actually our second dwelling within, and therefore we get a tax relief on that. So there is, but it's such a grey area of what that was, that some people do accept it, some people don't. But what he's done is he's just put a kibosh on the lot, really, and said it can't happen. It was designed on the basis that if you bought a block of flats, and you know, so you could have a reduction or relief on the balance of the block, as opposed to maybe, you know, the first one. So you might pay full stamp duty, and then you might not pay the rest of it on the others, in order to motivate investors to continue to buy. But I think that's where he says it's been abused, and it's been abused at the higher possible end, where it's only at the multi-£1 million properties. Can such things exist? I mean, they could probably exist in small semi-detaches, where they could have an annex to the back of the garden or to the side or above a garage or something like that. But the reality is that it's actually mostly related to high-end properties.
Yeah, so one tax partner likened the measure to a sledgehammer to crack a walnut. He says it's true, yeah. Multiple dwellings relief has been abused, but abolishing it feels like a sledgehammer to crack a nut. While this will end the abuse of spurious granny flat claims, it will also present some legitimate investors from investing. It will now be much harder to find an investor willing to buy those four flats above a parade of shops. The negative impact of this change, however, is greatly mitigated by the ability to claim commercial stamp duty land tax rates on purchases of six or more dwellings. And so, bearing that in mind, the measures on balance seem a good thing. But while he believes that the abolition of heavy-handed is heavy-handed, on balance he feels it probably does more good than harm. He points out that there are businesses whose sole activity it is to make amends to SDLT returns to claim multiple dwellings relief. And I have seen, looking around the internet this week, a lot of these property investment trainers. You can buy these courses to go on and learn how to build a multiple portfolio of properties. And one of their big tactics was to use this abuse of the tax to mitigate their obligations when it comes to building their portfolio. And of course, that's all been taken away. So that's one of the weapons in their armory down the drain. And that's probably why a lot of people have got their arms up.
That's right. So people have always had these, you know, get quick rich schemes, and that's sort of one of the loopholes that they're obviously offering out, saying you can all come into this and you don't pay the stamp duty, hence that's a profit on your overall investment as part of the profit that they would show. But it probably has been abused to those levels. I mean, you know, the number of high-end properties that are sold, or the blocks that are sold, are going to lose out now. So they'll have to be broken down into individuals, because people will have to buy those as individual homes and pay their own individual stamp duties. So yeah, there will be another way to deal with it, because buying it as a block that gave them the relief now means that they've got to sell them all individually. Of course, the term, you know, you get it with one and go with it with the other comes very back to this situation, because whilst they've taken away the idea of, you know, stamp duty or the cost saving on a multiple, what they're saying is we'll get it back because we're gonna, you know, you're gonna have to sell these as individuals, and individually everybody's gonna have to pay their own stamp duty, so we might get that money back somewhere else. So yeah, I think that terminology is a good terminology.
Well, that was it. Much Ado About Nothing, our budget of March the 6th, which we spent weeks building up to, and absolutely nothing pretty much happened. So I hope you found that enlightening in some way, shape or form. Thank you, Joe, as always. We'll see you for another Property Matters very soon.